Jay Krishnamurti's personal problem and the limited nature of its psychological and philosophical resolution. An essay by the world friend Adi Da. Jay Krishnamurti was a longtime popular religious or philosophical lecturer whose glamorous early life association with the Theosophical movement provided him with a lifelong charismatic mystique that his philosophy itself would never otherwise have deserved or aroused. Thus, Jay Krishnamurti, who only eventually disavowed the Theosophical movement's messianic claims about him, was, throughout his long adult life, popularly presumed to be a somewhat perfectly, or in some sense ultimately, enlightened figure, whereas, in fact, he was a person of limited religious and spiritual experience, and of limited understanding of the process and the requirements of real religious and spiritual life, who was perpetually preoccupied with the problem of the reactive tendencies and the time-bound nature of his ordinary thinking mind. Indeed, Jay Krishnamurti was characteristically and rather constantly involved with concerns relative to the limitations inherent in the third stage of life. Thus, his personal struggle was principally concerned with emotional reactivity, the thinking mind, and the will. And the philosophy he promoted is basically a psychological argument relative to the quieting or practical undermining of emotional reactivity, thought, and willfulness. However, even though Jay Krishnamurti's arguments and meditations served in his own case and potentially, in the case of some others, to at least occasionally and temporarily release or decondition emotion, mind, and the will, the result of the exercise was not and could not be perfect, or in any sense ultimate, enlightenment. Jay Krishnamurti's adult philosophical views were, at their point of origin, the product of an adolescent or generally third stage crisis of disillusionment relative to the mythical or otherwise only legendary or even merely imaginary and on that basis, and in the characteristic theosophical manner, popularly misconceived and reported, masters of the theosophical movement, and also relative to the popular mystical and occult teachings of the theosophical movement, and an accompanying adolescent or generally third stage crisis of desperate sorrow relative to the early and sudden death of his brother Nietzsche, who was his heart intimate companion in the theosophical enterprise. That disillusionment and desperate sorrow became the foundation mood of Jay Krishnamurti's entire adult life, and as an adult, he appeared to be constantly occupied with the struggle to understand and transcend the fact and the implications of an essentially disillusioned or faithless and desperately sorrowful or lonely state of emotion, mind, and will. In the lifelong context of that constant struggle, Jay Krishnamurti achieved a characteristic psychological and philosophical resolution, which he described with such words as aloneness, released of loneliness, and choiceless awareness, released of thought and willfulness. Indeed, even though he, especially early in his life, had some rather rudimentary mystical experiences, Jay Krishnamurti's achievement or resolution was not perfect, or in any sense ultimate, enlightenment, and not even any fully advanced or otherwise ultimate degree of spiritual realization, or real God realization. But it was a simple psychological state of quiescent emotion, mind, and will, marked by heightened physical and sensory openness and sensitivity to the etheric energy and perceptual phenomena of the natural world. Jay Krishnamurti's realization, or popularly presumed enlightenment, was basically a psychological and philosophical resolution of the developmental crisis that characterizes the third stage of life. He was, because of the limitations posed by his rather reactive temperament, disinclined toward the further enterprise of fully entering and fully passing through and beyond the developmental processes of the fourth, the fifth, and the sixth stages of life. Therefore, Jay Krishnamurti's achievement and his cultural or philosophical contribution to human society although it may be of some use as a meditation on psychological self-healing, is limited to the developmental concerns of the third stage of life. And thus, rather than providing insight or an example relative to the matter of perfect, or in any sense ultimate ego transcendence, and perfect, or in any sense ultimate enlightenment, J. Krishnamurti's resolution was, and is, for anyone who achieves it, merely another and even rather early stage of the development of the ego itself. The ego I is not an entity. The ego I is an activity. It is the activity of self-contraction, enacted by the body-mind as a whole and in its every part or function. And the principal or foundation characteristics or results of egoity are the presumptions of separateness, separativeness, difference, and apparent relatedness between a separate self and its objects. J. Krishnamurti's enterprise was a struggle to overcome emotional reactivity, thought, and willfulness. Thus, he was an urgent participant in the effort to resolve the conflicts inherent in the third stage of life, which stage is itself an early stage of the development or psychobiography of the ego. Thus, his resolution, although not psychologically clarifying and psychophysically healing, was merely the achievement of an advanced but not yet complete level of third stage maturity. He felt released and healed by his psychological and philosophical resolution, but he also remained psychologically and philosophically unable to proceed from there to the true and full embrace of the fourth stage of life, and via the fourth stage of life to the true and full embrace of the developmental stages beyond the fourth stage of life. J. Krishnamurti's resolution, achieved to one or another degree, can rightly be described as a would-be reactionless, thought-free, and motiveless, or non-willful state of individuated and independent aloneness. However healing he may have felt that achievement to be in mind, and heart, and body, including the brain, the state of individuated and independent aloneness, however purified or deconditioned, is not perfect or ultimate enlightenment, which is, whether in its yet limited sixth-stage presumption, or in its only by me revealed and given seventh-stage fullness and completeness, the realization of that which is inherently, perfectly, and non-separately single, or one and only in that perfect sense, alone. Indeed, aloneness, conceived and perceived as a state of both individuated and independent, is the primal characteristic of egoity itself. The presumption of individuated and independent aloneness is the presumption of separateness, and the presumption of separateness is itself the result of the activity that is separativeness. Indeed, the presumption of individuated and independent aloneness is, simply, self-contraction. Therefore, at last, J. Krishnamurti's resolution is, for anyone who achieves it, merely a psychologically much or however much deconditioned state of egoity. And, even though such a deconditioned state is functionally preferable to that of an emotionally reactive, hypermental, and willful adolescence, it is not perfect or in any sense ultimate enlightenment. Although J. Krishnamurti's spoken and written words make constant reference to psychological freedom, and to quietness of mind, and to receptivity, even via the physical brain, to the natural energy that is apparent when thought ceases, and so on, his descriptions of his achieved state are not those of a true and inspired religious ecstatic, nor do his words ever indicate the realization of either ultimate or unqualified spiritual bliss, or inherently perfect divine freedom, which bliss and freedom would and must necessarily characterize any one who has truly realized that which is obvious when self-contraction or the ego I is really transcended both in its effects and at its root. Finally, after his break with the theosophical movement, J. Krishnamurti always presented himself as an aggressively negative and Simon Peer critic of traditional religion, even in its esoteric and most profound forms, as well as in its lesser and popular and even false forms. After and, it appears, even because of his youthful disillusionment with the theosophical movement and its leaders, J. Krishnamurti was always reactively and altogether inordinately and negatively obsessed with the problem of authority figures and of the influence or even the very existence of authority itself. And because of this and his otherwise characteristic sensitivity, reactivity, and unresolved adolescent emotional complexity, he always resisted being intruded upon or controlled or guided or even informed by any other. He was an emotionally rather self-isolating and self-protective type, and his philosophy or expressed point of view is a direct expression of his own egoic character type, promoted in a manner that is intended to make it seem to be a universal and necessarily point of view, altogether free of the characteristic that J. Krishnamurti always said he most wanted to avoid, namely, the characteristic of authority, or the authority figure. However, it must be pointed out, J. Krishnamurti chose to teach rather than to be silent and unknown. Therefore, while and when all was said and done, J. Krishnamurti inevitably, consistently, and by his own choice, and by virtue of his own teaching efforts, functioned both publicly and privately as an authority and an authority figure, and even as a kind of traditional general guru, authoritatively informative instructor and opinion maker, and some would say, even as a kind of traditional religious and spiritual guru or revealer, and he was openly so acknowledged with remarkable adulation by his many followers, whom he courted and cultivated through constant public and private activities, including the exhaustive publication of his talks, interviews, and diaries, and, especially in his later years, the publication of summary narratives about his life history. In the long course of his career as a third stage public and private teacher, J. Krishnamurti often was with arguments that resemble those of early 20th century naturalistic or scientific humanists, ethical culturalists, and professional atheists, indiscriminately and aggressively opposed all forms of traditional religious enterprise, all forms of authority, all forms of faith and worship, all realizers or gurus, however great or small in their realization, and in short, of all religion, except for his own profession of religious or popular philosophical lecturing, and his own preferred form of religious or reasoned philosophical exercise, which is essentially a matter of, in his characteristic manner, understanding the functional thought mind, and communing, even via the quieted brain, with the pervasive etheric energy of the natural world. As a critic of religion, J. Krishnamurti was a profoundly uninformed, unsympathetic, and religiously inexperienced iconoclast. Indeed, as a critic of religion, and especially of esoteric true religion, J. Krishnamurti did not know or truly understand what he was talking about. And J. Krishnamurti never did finally overcome the religious disillusionment and emotional despair of his youth. He remained, even to his death, possessed by his separate and separative aloneness, bereft of any teacher, teaching, or graceful revelation that could attract him utterly and perfectly beyond himself.